Mr. Cheeseman, Reel 39. When the 7th Armoured Division was in the southern portion of the Alamein Line, before you got into action in the north, there was some criticism coming from infantry sources that tanks weren't supporting as well as they'd hoped. Did that actually come down to your level?
No, it did not. But I think I do have the answer as to why that was the case. And that was purely technical and mechanical. We had been, when I say we, I'm going to talk about the whole of the 7th Army. True, there was an awful lot of mechanized cavalry units which had lost their tanks and got refitted with new tanks. But nevertheless, broadly speaking, we were clapped out, mechanically speaking, when we came back to El Alamein and the Al Hafa Ridge before we east, my battalion, I don't know the rest, went down to the southern sector. Now, look at a tank which requires a little bit more than in the field of tension, really in this workshop of tension. But at the same time, you can't afford to do without the tank, or more specifically, you can't afford to do without the firepower of a tank. Then the only thing to do with a cut-out tank that's got a pretty good gun and a good crew is to deploy it in hold-down positions. In other words, a static action, whilst we fitters got on the task of waving a magic wand, if I can put it like that. It did give us a chance there, and of course there's a limit to what we could do in the field, but no, we did quite a good deal. And then thereafter, we had an easy time of it, fittest speaking. But look at the whole picture. Yes, tanks were required to support infantry. I don't know if that's the deployment of tanks these days, but certainly it was then. It was to support infantry. And if infantry is mobile, then tanks must be mobile to support them. If they can't be more bad, if we're working on the clutch or doing various adjustments and so even changing large sections of large-ish sections of the tank. So that may be the reason. Now, the criticism, no doubt, would be due to I'm going to probably get my wrist slapped for saying this, was due to the false high expectations instilled in us by our new army commander, General Montgomery. Gather round, lads, I'll tell you all about it. Now, no general had ever said to his troops that, he's a good fella, great, you know. And so, He told us this, that we would only have to feint, as it were, go forward and come back to our positions.
I've got this.
We've got that.
Yes, I've got this, yes.
And then he tells a flim and great whack, saying that there's a Cornish lass waiting to go through, and we won't call it. I mean, if he's going to be honest and truthful, why didn't he tell us that? Because we could have took it on the chin, we had to. Die or die. But that's the situation. And because of that, I think that misunderstanding, which incidentally raises ugly head after D-Day, because the terrain was not tank warfare terrain. We learned that in Italy. I mean, it's not a question of hindsight. Because I said we
didn't want
to listen. So does that answer the question?
Had the lifting of damaged and broken down tanks from the battlefield improved? Did you have the vehicles to do this by Alamein time?
And No. I'm emphatically saying no. I'm now talking as a tiny little fella in one battalion. Broadly speaking, well, of course, by that time, there were such things as white lorries and other very Americans, which had been going for some time, which astonished me when we saw a tank loaded on the back of a flat lorry, as it were, you know. How they got them up there and got them down, I don't know. But we never ever had any tank transport at all, other than our battalion light aid department. The big stamp, you know.
But they had them.
We had one, you know. And when I say the scammer, people will immediately imagine, oh yes, that's the articulator. No. If you consider the scammer in two parts, that is the trailer where the tank goes up, and the locomotive part, which gives power to it, we had the locomotive part only. I.e. we could tow tanks, we could do it, we could not save the most weakest part of the tank, and that is its tracks. You know, even when LAD got a hold of it, its tracks were still being used. And that, as I say, was... in fact, if we could have improved the reliability of tracks up to the reliability, eventually, speaking, of the engine of the Crusader, we'd have a good time there. But...
We left you at Homs after you'd gone across the desert after your wounds, and obviously preparing for the invasion which was to come of Italy. What was happening now?
Everyone in the division was on to training, with mixed up, as it were, to make the pill nice and sweet, with... sort of activities. For instance, General Lynn, I think it is, in his book, Short History of the 7th Armoured Division, I learned this, although I was at Homs, I learned this through this book, reading this book, that there was a large club created. He's talking about an urban area. I could tell you with never other than in the desert. But he's talking about a club set up, there's pictures all set up, and music for all. There was even, apparently, makes great talk of this, there was an Olympus Magna steeplechase where the local sheiks were at Desert Red Horses, of course, took part, and he says that thousands of pounds passed through the totalizer and what have you. And this is news to me. We were getting, of course, I'd just come back out of hospital and back to the battalion. And naturally, I'm fit, there's no argument. So I straight down to a really heavy program of not only checking the new stuff we got, but also, and that took a lot of doing. You know, you just couldn't get a brand new tank and take it in a battle. It had to be checked. And my goodness, you could find an awful lot of problems which nipped in the bud. It was fair enough. So checking the tank, but most of all, was the waterproofing. And we had to waterproof our vehicles to take a depth of 6 foot of water. Well, you don't have to be mechanically minded to realise that that a carburetor intake can't be hooked. It has to be fitted with a kind of snorkel thing to 6 foot above the crucial line. And same with, of course, the exhaust. 6 foot, a 6 foot head of water, probably the engine, you know, well, that is enough pressure to push the water back up the exhaust pipe to stop the engine, you know, take it, and then your flooded gets useless. The one thing I'd like to mention about this, I'll just go on to the right, there was sump vents. They had to be held stick 6 feet up. There was also, in those days, there was gearbox vents. Two gearboxes, there was no emergency gearbox. There was back axle vents. But what about the vent on each individual cell of your battery. A 12-volt battery, that's 6 cells, that's 6 vents. And in our tank batteries, there's 20. Seawater, in electrolyte, you've got poisonous gas, apart from ruining the battery. Well, that was quite easily done, actually, was fixing the vents on them. We used condoms. we didn't have much use otherwise, because there was very little doing in Tripoli whenever we got there. But as I say, we used condoms.
And these were fitted over the...
The same way. And when the gas, you probably know that when two dissimilar metals are immersed in an acid, and you shove or you bring apart your two similar metals, actually, and you put an electric current through to make them dissimilar, to give them accumulated electricity, it splits up the water, H2O, the two molecules of hydrogen and one of oxygen, so you've got a very high explosive of gas coming off. And that would just fill the condoms. That was very simple, that one.
And the longer vents you mentioned, the exhaust and so forth, there were pieces of piping, were they?
Yes, metal.
Were there anything else that had to be covered by some material or substance?
Yes. It was discovered that the white metal parts of an engine, that's the sort of aluminium based stuff, like the sump of the technical term is white metal, I think, but that when submerged in seawater acts as an electrode, and the seawater actually does destroy it, so we had to pinch all that, which those old vehicles, the sump of the engine, the body of the magnetos, the gearbox casing, the clutch housing casing, and as empty, you really had to put your thinking cap on and get your workshop manuals on and really see. And then, as I say, they all had to be painted to prevent seawater getting at them. It was a huge job. The other thing, of course, which we fitters had to do was it was then decided that we would have to know a little bit about explosive charges for demolishing bridges, how to make them safe, and also, we already had lessons on lifting mines and seeing what sort of thing there, but it was going to be our duty as well.
Were there any other ways, other things that had to be sealed in the engine of a vehicle taking to water? D-Day, I think, for example, they had a kind of a mixture of various things which stuck over these areas.
You mean canvas?
I'm thinking of in terms of your plug points. How do you keep the water off from getting into your plug?
Oh, yes, I see what you mean, yeah. Oh, yes, this, we treated that exactly with the same stuff that we had for painting the white metal.
And that kept the water out of those.
You understand that our preparation for waterproofing was limited. I.e., you say, right, you are, there it is, it can stay in the water now for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, a year, it doesn't matter. Oh no, it would last for about, say, a couple of hours at the most, and then you've got problems on your hand, But the mere fact that you're asking me all these questions, which really, I hadn't thought about on all these years anyway, shows you the complexity of our work. Now, I'm talking entirely about me, a vehicle fitter, my task. The rest of the battalion, or the fist of the battalion, it was no longer going to fight in the northern desert, but it closed, entirely different theatre of war. Now, the area around Homs and that way, I would call semi-cultivated. It was more, to our English eyes, it was more desert than a cultivated field, but the Italians had done quite a lot of work on it, and it was semi-cultivated, and so it gave us some idea as regards that, and therefore there was an awful lot of tactical exercises going on. And again, as far as I know, without any infantry whatsoever, we were quite independent. But that's. Then, of course, those exercises, and our work, by the way, was tested in the sea. We were on the coast, and it was tested in the sea. And it was most peculiar, we had jeeps, of course. Our refit was by now the usual mixture of British and American tanks, and almost entirely 100% American lorries and what have you. I was given an American reconnaissance truck, an armoured reconnaissance truck, for my workshop. Because by then, when I came back, I got this table, and I was in charge of the reconnaissance. I think I've told you that. So, and that was a fighting vehicle, but it was a workshop. Actually, it was really a tool carrier, and of course, with guns, that sort of thing. Yes, getting back to that jeep that we in, there's two fellas sitting in the front, in the jeep, driving down to the water, and they're getting, the water comes up, and up and up. There's a couple of heads going through the windscreen there, of course, as well. And, of course, the intake and the snorkel for the car back there, on a calm sea, of course, and draw around and brought it out. It was amusing, and it was an amusing event, but it did have its uses. We found out when it came out, said, hello, we didn't put enough of that gun on here to get him through, and that sort of thing.
Sand bottom in the sea, did that not cause problems from tracks and wheels to get grip?
No
problem.
Don't forget that you've got the buoyancy in the vehicle. You see, it's what it is, it's about half its weight, so, there's no problem there. It did have, our bit of beach did have, you could see the black patches in the water, lots of rock area, but we moved on that. Now, forgetting one rather interesting point, when we, I joined the battalion as it was coming in to where we were going to stay to get refitted and all that sort of thing, near Leptis Magna. We were virtually sort of on the beach, and there was palm trees there, and our bedrolls under the bar, palm trees, and can you imagine the idyllic life we had as first thing in the morning, out your bedroll, nothing on, of course, and straight out of the sea, and have a good swim, I don't know what have you. We take our towel with us, But where can you hang your towel? You can't be in the sand. There was a very handy mine, a marine mine, with the horns on. It had been washed up and said, oh, well, it'll be safe. So we actually hung our towels on the horns of the sea at a mine, huge thing, for I think about 3 or 4 days until we were suddenly, the whole of the battalion was evacuated. Whilst the mate the main theme. And funnily enough, I was an inquisitive mind. I was on the point two or three times of taking an adjustable spanner off to take one of those holes off to see what was inside. Yes, sobering thought. The other interruption to our heavy program of preparing for Italy was, of course, the North African Victory Parade, where King George the Sixth was.
This is one in Tripoli.
Yeah. In fact, there's another point. I'm not sure whether it was Tripoli or Tunisia, because I've read recently the North African Victory Parade in Tunisia. I wonder whether there were two victory parades, one for the First Army and one for the Eighth Army. Probably that's the answer to them. So details sort of get blurred in your mind. To such an extent, by the way, that I cannot remember actually boarding the our LST landing ship tanks, the normal catcher of the army and so on. Everything's now there. Soldiers for the use of them. Yeah. As against the landing craft tanks. The landing craft tanks, I mean, took tanks, and there's only one deck. There was no upper deck at all, it was over the sky. Whereas the ship was really airship. The tanks were underneath, and on the top deck was the lorries, trucks, and also artillery up to and including 25 pounders that didn't even have to go. And it had, unlike the usual landing craft of those days, it had a bow which the doors opened on the other side, and there was a landing platform lowered. And like the raw ship today where the prow lifts up, there's no need for landing craft because that's part and parcel of the quay side. So we carry our own landing ramp. Another thing as well is that I do distinctly remember sleeping on board. And yet, and I haven't got an atlas, so I can't remember. What would the mileage be from the Libyan coast near Tripoli, taking the westward route around Sicily and coming in under 500-600 miles? And of course, the speed of it couldn't be much more than about 10-12 knots an hour somewhere. So that we'd spend a night on board, and I cannot remember this sort of thing. But what I can remember is the attitude of us on board. Now, I had three chaps who were reinforcements. The battalion, the long time that I was away from the battalion, was it caught a few casualties, and they had not been in action at all. And of course, as I do remember, before going there, it was all wisecracks and what have you, and I was giving as much as they were giving us back and what have you. But on board, that interplay gradually stiffened. The knots of funny wisecracks were invoking "oh, shut your bleeding face" sort of thing, and we just withdrew into ourselves, and that lasted the whole of the voyage until we got within sight of land in Italy. But in the meantime, As ever, mechanically minded, I sweethearted the ship's engineer, and I got a good look around the engines and what have you, and I was surprised to find that they had a fully equipped workshop on this tank landing ship. And I was told, yes, about in a flotilla, there will be always one that's got extensive work. Lathes and shaving machines and all that sort of thing, so they were well looked after in that respect. Anyway, this, getting back to my fellows.
Do you remember their names, the three men you had?
Alec, Fred, and Jim. Sticks me in my head. I don't know the second names at all. And it was first names, by the way. I was never a disciplinarian at all. I prefer to lead by example rather than by word, as it were. But anyway, we were sort of crawling up the coast of Italy. Would be a half a mile away. Certainly not very much further than there. And we were sort of looking over the prow of the ship, or near the prow of the ship, and we saw the body of a soldier, and the second body of a soldier, fully equipped. And we thought it must have been because the gases must have got them to float them like that. And sort of floating, and when our bow hit them, they were flopping, and of course they went away, and of course my three lads. Never seen anything like this. Well, I've never seen much of it and that sort of thing, but at least I was hardened to it. Turned to me, and it was then that I said, oh, we've got to become a team, we must be. And so I sort of shrugged my shoulder and I said, some of the air, what have you, and that was it. Now, when we, again, looking at the map, I can see no headland there, but my mind gives me, coming round this headland, and we hit the invasion, because we were late comers.
This is at Salerno, was it?
Yes, this is at Salerno. Well, history tells you the 7th Armored Division was 4 years after we were there. And there was the whole lot set out, the deployment of each battle element, just as if, just like what I've seen in the desert. For instance, right on the horizon were the CCSs, of course, the hospital ships, with the huge red crosses, And it was, by the way, this is getting the end of the afternoon, and you see the red crosses. Now then, here is something which I cannot explain. And I don't intend to explain it. But my three lads and I said, if they're a... I never thought that Red Crosses on hospital ships. And I said, oh yes. Now I would have been equally surprised. But I spoke as if I'd seen it all before. Yes, well, I'd been on a hospital ship. I was paralysed down below. And it seemed as if I recall sitting on deck at night time, lit up with these huge crosses. I can't explain it, but just as it was obvious, I've seen that before, and I'll wear the t-shirt and I've been there.
What was the scene on the beach as you approached it?
Wait a minute. Oh my goodness, the story goes on an awful long time before I get to the beach.